everybody, Terrence Pop here with another episode of Live in the Lair. All right, so today I've been thinking about an email I got from a guy about a week and a half ago. And he asked me if I could tell him or share with you guys if there was any time that I ever, like, got over or got lucky or whatever in regards to being in the Army. There are a lot of stories there. In the military, like, if you're talking to people and like, yeah, he got over, you know, means that he either got lucky or somebody was running top cover for him or somebody just wasn't paying attention and, you know, everything was good to go. That happened to me quite a few times in my life. All right, so what are some of the really important get-over times I've ever had? The first wave, well, that was about voting. The second wave, that was about the pill. Double wah. The third wave, it was about securing more rights than men. What does the fourth wave look like? Find out and arm yourself against the war for your soul and this country. You need these books here. Surviving Fourth Wave Feminism, Volumes 1 and 2. They're on sale now. Click on the link below in the description, because if you save masculinity, you're going to wind up saving the world. I was a private first class in the 9th Infantry Division. And, you know, I got earmarked to be a deuce and a half driver. And on this particular operation, they picked me to drive. And it turns out the entire battalion did a 28-mile road march, full gear, equipment, everything. It was some kind of test or something that they were doing. They were comparing different infantry units and so forth. And what they would do is they'd have the number of soldiers, and they would weigh how much equipment they had, and they'd walk them about 14 miles, and then they would calculate, you know, who fell out, what injuries, and then they give you water, and then they'll walk you the 14 miles back. Let me tell you, because I remember when that morning, well, like, we didn't know this was happening, okay? It was out of the blue kind of thing. Normally, if they're going to do something stupid like that, you'll get some kind of rumblings from above. You know, hey, you might want to make sure your boots are cleaned and ready to go, or somebody be like, you know, you should probably, I don't know, have a jar of peanut butter in your rucksack. There's always little hints that they'll try to give you. There was none of that. We did PT that morning. I went to formation. They said, hey, Pop, you're driving. Everyone laughed. I thought it was great, you know, because I'd already been driving for on and off for months now, and it fucking sucked. So I was kind of bummed. I was like, God damn it. So I went and got my K-pot, my LBE, and, you know, canteens and stuff. That was the uniform they told me to show up in. Go to the motor pool, and I'm doing the PMCS on the deuce and a half. And the motor pool sergeant comes out and goes, hey, Pop, you hear what's going on? I'm like, no, they just need me to drive for something. He goes, dude, they're doing like this, you know, road march thing. There's going to be like doctors and scientists there. It's going to be fucking crazy. And you're driving. So I drive, you know, I clear the vehicle. The motor pool sergeant, you know, signs off saying it's good to go. It's been PMCS. I get in, I drive around the battalion area, and they've already told everyone what the deal is, and I'm watching everyone come down from the barracks with their bags and baggages, and everyone's just they're singing the blues. And you know, they go in the arms room, they get all of their equipment, and they made them walk with everything: night vision, all the crew serve weapons, you know, everything you were supposed to have. It was like literally you're loading up your shit and walking to combat. And let me tell you, those guys, I mean, standard straight leg infantry, it's not really a big deal to pull a 12 miler out of your ass, you know. They did it from time to time in 9th Infantry Division. Not as much as when I was in 2nd Bat, because they were technically still motorized. But there's none of that shit. Everyone walked. And I remember everyone just bitching up a storm. And I have to follow behind everyone at like this snail's fucking pace, waiting for stragglers. And let me tell you, that's one of the reasons why I hated being in the straight leg infantry. Is the people that you knew were going to quit were the ones that always would quit whenever shit got fucking tough. But they were kind of sticklers on this one. You know, you had to be royally effed up before they'd put you on the back of that truck. And, you know, that first 14 miles, I think they put 3 people on the truck. Probably 10 or 15 tried to like fall out. They wouldn't let them. We stop. You know, they do all kinds of blood work on these guys. They take blood pressures. You know, they had some other equipment they hooked up. I think they're checking their heartbeats and stuff. That took like an hour and a half. So these guys, they walk 14 miles. They stop. Everyone's smoked and sweaty. And they do all this bullshit, you know, blood work and what have you. And that literally, this was done in the field. There was like a quick, it looked like a combat hospital set up. When we walked out there, and they did everything, and then we walked back. And there were some very unhappy motherfuckers. And when they told everyone to get up, put their shit back on, you're walking back, you could literally hear everyone like, fuck. And that next 14 miles back, that wasn't done very quickly. Those guys were hurting for certain. On the way back, like additional seven more people were let on the vehicle. The rest of them were told to fuck it up. Fuck you, suck it up, keep walking. So we get done. And I take the deuce and a half back to the motor pool, sign it back in. And the motor sergeant just laughing his ass, like, man, those guys just got fucked. And I come back to the company area, and there's dudes with like 3-inch size blisters on their feet, the bottom of their feet. People walked until their toenails came off. You know, and up until that point, yeah, I'd seen some blisters and stuff like that, and really wasn't a big deal. It wasn't until I went into the Ranger Battalion where I experienced, you know, foot problems like that in the beginning. And the key is, you know, if you keep your feet conditioned to that, you don't have to worry about it. But if you're one of those guys who only gets in shape for that road march, then you chill out for 3 or 4 months, and then you spend 2 weeks getting in. And then out of the blue, you got to do something like that, you're going to suffer. So bottom line here in the story is, if you're going to be a frontline fighter, it's on you to make sure your mind and body are up to the task. Okay? Because if this was like a World War II scenario, and, you know, like in France, they just all of a sudden turn on the lights and say, hey, we're being invaded, let's go. And you got to throw your shit on and do the man dance. And you're not ready. It's not a good day. Let me tell you, I mean, getting ready or getting mobilized or sent into a war zone is terrifying.
And it's even more terrifying if you know in the back of your mind you are not ready for it. So I thought that was pretty funny. That was, other than the fact that I had to drive 28 fucking miles at like 2 miles an hour, stopping and going. It was a good day for me. Paid off. But that was one of the few times in that unit where I got over. Yeah. One of the other ones I want to say when I was the 9th ID. We were getting mobilized to go to the Sinai, Egypt for the MFO mission. I think it was like 6 months and 30 days or 6 months, 21 days, something like that. And my first sergeant calls me in there and he's like, hey, man, we're sending you to the generator mechanic school. And I'm like, what the fuck for? He goes, well, you're going to Egypt and they're going to need somebody trained in how to maintain and operate the generators on the FOB. I'm like, all right. Well, I'm a PFC, so I'm like, whatever. So I go do that. That's like 6 days. Didn't think much of it. Come back. 2 days later, I get called in to see the first sergeant again. And I'd already done all of these combat swim tests to go to the Ranger Battalion when I was doing my 4187 packets. Did 3 of them. So he knew I could swim. So he just straight up tells me, hey, you're going to lifeguard school. Like, what? What the fuck do I have to do that? He goes, well, when you rotate out of sector and you're back at South Camp, you're going to probably be working, as a lifeguard, at Herb's Beach. I don't know what they call it now, but back then it was called Herb's Beach, who was a retired sergeant from Vietnam who worked it. So I'm like, I'm a PFC, okay. So me and my buddy Phipps, we have to get up every day, like 5 in the fucking morning, be at the gym, at the pool for laps, and we start swimming about 6:30-ish, and then we swim till lunch, okay? And they told us not to eat breakfast because, it's going to make you nauseous, all the swimming and exposure to chlorine, until you get used to it. So the first day, we didn't eat breakfast. And literally, I swam from 6 in the morning till noon, had lunch. And every day, that went on that first week, 7 days straight, there's no time off. We swam between 3 and 4 miles a day. And by the end, we were doing 5 miles a day. Which, for you guys out there who are not up to swimming, that is just grueling. Grueling. And then you're in the chlorine for all that time. You get out to take a piss. You don't even use the urinal. You just take a shit because you have diarrhea because of all the chlorine. And, I was miserable. I fucking hated that. And you had to do the rescues and the CPR and go through all the safety equipment and all the current regulations up until that point. It fucking sucked. Until we went to Egypt. Yeah, I still had to go to sector. I did 3 rotations, 1 month on, 1 month off. But in between, I got to work as a lifeguard. So while everyone else was doing guard duty and, working at the motor pool in the desert and doing other fucked up bullshit, I was working Herb's Beach as a lifeguard. Winning. So it sucked in the beginning, but it paid off in the end. I think that was a really good story of getting over. Yeah. There's another one here. All right. PLDC. Primary Leadership Development Course. So I had just finished Ranger School, and I came back from Ranger School, and I was like 138 pounds, 136. I was just emaciated. You could find the Ranger School photo. on, it's on the internet. I don't remember the class date, somewhere in the 90s. And, because I got recycled and it fucking sucked. But, you know, it is what it is. I come back and we have a dress green inspection and I go down there and my team leader just says, get the fuck out of here and go hide in your room, you fat bastard. Because in like 3 weeks, I went from 136 to like 185, 190 pounds. I was a fat motherfucker. I could barely put on my dress greens. I had slathering fat neck hanging over and everything. And oh my God, it was terrible. So my team leader comes up with my squad leader and they say, hey, you're going to PLDC. I'm like, all right. I mean, what am I going to do? I'm in E4. Go to PLDC. It is what it is. And I go down there and my squad leader gives me a letter and it says I have to give it to basically the class leader, the NCYC of my particular class. So I show up there and apparently there were some old Rangers that, you know, were just waiting a couple, 3 years to retire who were hurt, who were pulling duty at the compound on Fort Lewis at the PLDC compound. They knew I was coming. They made me hand him the letter. And they open up in front of me, and he looks at me, and he goes, all right, Pop, if I see you eating anything other than white rice, chicken, Jell-O, and skim milk, I will smoke the dog shit out of you. He crumples it up and throws it in my face. All right, so I thought that was going to suck. But in reality, they were looking out for me, because I went from like 190-ish down to like 171 while I was there. Because back then, PLDC was almost a month long. And it went well. It went well. In fact, it went so well. Like, it was almost effortless for me. Almost effortless. And there's a good one here. So we have to do land navigation in PLDC. They give you your map, your compass, you know, they give you your point, and actually they give you 5 points, and you gotta go find them. And the farthest distance I walked was like 2 clicks, a little over 2 clicks. That was my longest distance between the 2 points. The rest of them were, you know, right around a click. It was like, I literally had been used to navigating with a pine needle and a fucked up map in Ranger school to pinpoint accuracy to dealing with a land nav course that, in my opinion, was created for kindergartners. We had like 3 hours to do it. I literally finished it in like 55 minutes. And it was one of those weird days in Fort Lewis where the sun came out, was a semi-blue sky. It got up to about 72 degrees. So I'm not going to waste it. So I take my ruck off. I've already got all my points. I'm not going to go in and, you know, turn them in because, you know, they'll just make me do shit. I didn't feel like it. So I strip down to my PT shorts, lay down my poncho. I'm just sunning myself. And I'm laying there in the grass. And this dude walks up and his hat's all fucked up. And he looks like three shades of fucked up, you know. It was funny. And he like looks at me and he's like, ah. He just keeps going. I check my watch. I got like 20 minutes left. Put my uniform back on, pack everything up. Leisurely walk to the turn-in point. turn in my sheet, get a Go Max. And apparently, this individual who walked up on me and saw me suntanning had told other people in the class, and everyone fucking knew about it, including the instructors. So my instructor comes up and he just starts making me do push-ups. They do some goddamn push-ups out here. What do you think you are, suntanning yourself in a training environment? I'm like, yeah, what are you going to do? I thought that was pretty good. That was a pretty good one. The look on that guy's face was absolutely fucking priceless. All right, and here's another one. So, we were doing an airborne operation, and this is before Panama, and we were jumping into Puerto Rico. We did the initial jump into Puerto Rico, and it was a clusterfuck. They didn't call the winds right on the drop zone. People were landing in those crazy trees with the long-ass fucking thorns. Some guys got, you know, injured fairly decently. They weren't career-ending injuries, but, I mean, for a training environment, it's still fucked up. I think we had like 7 guys get hurt out of a platoon. That's pretty high. So we land, we do our deal. They reset everything because we all knew we were training for Panama. They reset the whole scenario, and like 2 days later, we're going to do it again. So this time, the pucker factor is really high because we're down 7 people and we're doing it again. I'm like 4 people from the door. We're standing up. They already gave all the jump commands. They open the door, and then, you know, there's that change in pressure and the humidity hits you in the face. And then, you know, a lot of people get that wave of nausea. So every once in a while, a guy will start puking in a bag. And I'm like, fuck, I do not want to do this again. So they give us the 30 seconds. Guy stands in the door. And he just keeps standing there. And then they come by and they pull him back. And then they shut the doors. And then you have the crew chiefs talking amongst themselves. And they say, oh, we're going to racetrack. Too many winds on the ground. So I'm like, fuck. It's going to be a repeat. We're going to lose 7 more people. We won't even be mission effective. We lose 14 guys out of a platoon. That's almost 50% of your strength. So we literally fly around for another like 20 minutes, you know. And for those of you that don't know, standing up in a parachute fully rigged in combat equipment in an aircraft that's, you know, doing this, you know, is pretty tough. And it's quite exhausting. So I'm sweating like a pig. And literally they're like, okay, no drop. So we all unhook and we start taking off our fucking shit. It's because that's what they told us to do. And then they come out like, no, put the chutes back on. You're jumping. And my platoon sergeant is like, we will not be putting these parachutes on again until they're cleared by the riggers and reissued. Because this is a huge safety concern. And there was like some yelling between Sergeant Greenway and the PL and this other officer from headquarters. But and Greenway won. Because I had a sneaking suspicion he was in no hurry to injure more Rangers needlessly. So not only did I get over that day, but the rest of the people in that bird got over. Because I think several of the birds did make the jump. And they were having the same amount of, you know, fucked up casualties and injuries on the ground. And that's when, you know, the battalion commander, you know, called and, you know, just put the kibosh on it. And a lot of people don't seem to understand that in the military, it's a money thing. Everything exists in pots of money. So if you're doing a jump and the Air Force needs you to do that jump to qualify the plane and the pilots and the crew, they pay for everything. All right, now, if we're doing the training, then the money for the aircraft, the fuel, everything else comes out of the budget for that particular unit. So what ends up happening is like some sick game of money chicken. Who's going to pay for the training? And the first one that cancels is the one that pays for it. And it's usually never the Army. So I found out on that particular day, it was the colonel that called it. It was literally minutes away from the Air Force saying, fuck it, this is too dangerous, and they would call it. That doesn't happen that often, but it has happened on occasion. And it's usually around a technical issue with an aircraft or something like that. So, yeah, let me tell you, man. We landed, turned in our shit, went back to our hooches. I ate dinner, and I slept like a baby. Because I was in no mood to do that shit again. Now, I hate jumping, period. Okay, I didn't hate it as much then as I did after I did the jump into Panama, because then I got to see exactly what's at the end of the training road for that when you do it for real. So, I mean, I think that is that's a good get-over story right there, man. But wow. And the lieutenant colonel that we had in command of the battalion back then his name was Miastis. He's got to be like 70-some years old now. Didn't really care for the guy, but I was just an E4, E5 at the time. So my experience in dealing with higher level officers was severely limited. A lot of people hated his guts and they had their reasons. My disdain did not go to that level, though I did dislike the guy. It is what it is. I disliked a majority of officers, period, anyway, so what are you going to do?